The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
What is it that I want to do? And that's when I just began to do a lot of writing. And, you know, at the time and ever thinking of like, oh, I want to be a writer, writing being a main part of my career is seems like a luxury, right? Like starving artist, who are you to even think about that? But I did begin to write. And what really came of that was my memoir and my first book, Find Your Voice. So what does that actually mean? I wrote a loose, you know, kind of not script, manuscript. But manuscript
yeah.
of what I wanted, really a table of contents. And I'll say, thank goodness I'm a good speaker, because once I really began to understand that I wanted this book and Find Your Voice to be my message, I got out there again on social networks and started sharing about it even before it was a thing.
Right.
So I got invited to come and speak in LA, and that's where my publisher was in the audience. And that's where I'm so glad that I'm a good presenter, because when she got my manuscript, her and my editor were like, this has got to go. This is Cliff Notes. They wanted to toss the whole thing, but they're like, the concept is there.
Okay.
So Puerto Rico, at the end of it, you know, I just stayed there a year, but it was fruitful in the sense of allowing me to pause, think, giving myself space to write and, you know, not feeling guilty for it and not feeling guilty for diving into some deep thinking. So it was the foundation for everything from since then.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hello and welcome. My name is Sahara Paz. I'm a personal branding expert and a professional speaker. I want you to own your voice in an emotional, intelligent manner, whether it's speaking out loud or branding yourself online. I hope you enjoy this episode.
All right, Sahar. So thanks for coming on the podcast, Nubia connecting us. As you were saying before, I'm going to talk about branding and emotional intelligence and all the kind of stuff that entrepreneurs and solopreneurs and business owners really need to, you know, they're always struggling with that kind of stuff. They don't know what to do from, is it your company, is your brand? But maybe we can go back a little bit because I want to tell your story as well. So you can get into, you know, where you grew up, what your background is, where your family's from, you know, whatever you want to share. And then we'll get into all the stuff that you're doing today. Does that make sense?
You got it. Yeah. And okay, I would say that all of it really goes hand to hand. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. That's just kind of part of my DNA, which I believe a lot of folks out there who hear that understand what it means. And
right.
at the age of 13, I started my first business, which was baby and pet sitting. Okay. And really, that was the first time I experienced the positive power of branding. So this is Denver, Colorado, late 80s. Here I am, 13 years old, on my bike, right. And I got the okay from my mom to canvass the neighborhood. So I right. made flyers. I had my colors. My penmanship was on point. I made sure to think about one kid or one pet, one price, two or more. I'm bringing right. my friend Amber, and it's yeah. more than that.
And there was no internet then. There was no social media.
No, there yeah. was just a phone on the wall with a long cord, and right. you wanted to make sure nobody else got on the phone. So this was before, you know, digital marketing, where you can figure out, hey, is my message landing? So
right.
I believe that because of the way I presented both the price structure, the way I put Sahar is not a common name. You know, I was so right. worried, like, what are people going to think? They're going to be like, oh, this is weird. I'm not calling her. But I had success. And I believe that I really gained trust by the way that I presented that flyer, by the sure. way that I presented myself when they finally did call and stumble on my name and call me Sarah. Right. right? So, you know, that's been a big funny. Part of my journey. And, yeah. you know, timing is everything. And I have to say that in my professional life, it's been tough. I was in New York when the economy crashed in 2008.
Right.
And I had just pivoted from finance to fashion, the business side of fashion. And okay. I was about to start at Iconics, which has a really unique model in the fashion industry. They have a licensing model, so they own more than 20 brands. And I was going to be a brand manager. I'm pumped.
Okay.
Day before I begin.
They license their brands to other manufacturers?
You got it. So, got well, it. Right. what it is, let's say we take a brand like Danskin.
Okay.
And then the brand manager would be someone like in my role is thinking about, I need a outerwear designer. I need someone who does, you know, the sports bra. I need someone right. who specializes in the pantyhose. And you're bringing all these different designers to collect underneath one brand.
Got it. Makes sense.
Right. So that was their licensing model, which was really, I thought, smart. And then it goes out to, you know, big retailer stores and so on.
Right.
But the day before I was supposed to start, I got laid off because the economy had tanked.
And
that was
you.
Really the first time that I had discovered the power of my personal brand. So at this point, we've got MySpace. Facebook is beginning to pop up. I also had a blogger. And I had talked about when I made that pivot from finance to fashion, I actually went back to school. So I'm in my late 20s. I graduated at the age of 30. And I'm actually talking about that journey. That is my thought leadership. I didn't realize at the time. Okay. And my friends are like, why are you getting so deep online? This just post your favorite right.
you
music.
You were just blogging you know? About it, meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm blogging okay. about it and using the social platforms to express what it was like, one, pivoting from finance to fashion and seeing how much the leadership was the same. I also spoke about being an older student and the benefits of that. Okay. And, you know, some of my friends made fun of me, but at the end of the day, what I was able to do was leverage that. So the museums and colleges began to see my message.
Okay.
So this is my first lesson in personal branding. And that's right. how my speaking business began.
You were in New York at this point, right?
I was in New York.
So okay. Where were you going to school? So you were going to school and working, or you just went full time?
I went full time. I went full time and accelerated, graduated at the age of 30. And that was right when 2008, when everything had collapsed. So here I am, graduated. The job just slipped. What am I going to do?
Okay.
And that's when I began to really leverage the people who were coming to me on the blog or Facebook or MySpace. And that did take interest. And those were people that were hiring me to come and speak to their students.
Sure. And there were less people doing that in those days. So blogging was new. Mm-hmm. There was less competition. There was more interest in, mm-hmm. you know, in, I mean, everybody's still looking for content, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So you were kind of in a new, you were kind of pioneering a little bit what, you know, the way you were getting your message out there, but you were really just sharing your ideas, right? You were exactly. not like, I'm going to brand myself. You didn't, right?
Exactly.
It was a little cathartic.
Yeah. And that's what I want to share to your audience. You know, one of the biggest things I get with personal branding is I don't want to self-promote. And I said, well, right. I'm not self-promoting. Personal branding is not just promotion. It's not a reflection of your resume. It means to describe your approach. What's it like to work with you?
Right.
Right. What are your opinions? How are you going to push back or move forward a meeting?
Right.
Are you just a yes woman or a yes man? You know, so these are the types of things that you reveal in the small pieces of content that you put out there, AKA your thought leadership.
Right. Well, I think people, they want to work with you and they, if they feel that they know you, right. And the kind of person that you are. So I think there's always a way to do it and be comfortable about it. You don't have to be, like you said, people feel like self-promotion is like selling and they don't want to be a salesperson, even though we all mm-hmm. are, you and I know mm-hmm. that. So I think that people have to kind of find their, you know, their comfortable way of of sharing their message. I think some people are a little uncomfortable about telling their story. They don't think it's compelling. They don't think anybody cares. But, you know, we all, I mean, look, do you resonate with everybody? No. But you will find that audience that resonates with the kind of people that you're looking to do business with. And that's a choice, right? We're solopreneurs, entrepreneurs. You do get to choose who you do business with and who you interact with and the crowd that you find. Yeah. Okay. So you graduated. Where'd you graduate in New York?
LIM College.
Okay. And that was a master's at that point or an advanced degree?
No, this is me in undergrad. So at that point I had worked in finance and everything because I was an entrepreneur. So I went into college and I was like, man, I'm dropping out. I want to just go ahead and make money. And I had I could tell you a million different initiatives that I've had and failed, but we won't take time on all of that.
Right.
So for me, this was really going back. And I think also on an emotional intelligent, and just to be very vulnerable, I'm a survivor of PTSD. So there's a lot of that that comes into play. When you're younger, you don't understand how to study or how to, really succeed in a college environment. I went to the University of Colorado where I'm one in 300 in a classroom. LIM College, I'm one of 20 people and I'm balanced between introvert or extrovert. And so all of this plays into the types of leadership roles and the jobs that I take and why I'm ultimately great at what I do today, because it took that journey to figure it out.
Right.
So
you were able to get into finance and fashion even without a college degree. Like you fought your way in and self-made and the whole thing. Yeah. Well, I think everything's timing, right? So maybe you weren't emotionally ready to absorb and deal with college when you were younger. And then you got to the point where you said, listen, I need this, I want this, and you went for it.
Okay. I was too much in a rush,
Yeah, well, I think we're all kind of pushed through that process. You know, we go to school, we go through high school, you go to college, you go to maybe graduate school, and next thing you know, you pop out the end of the conveyor belt and you're out of breath.
Yeah.
You're like, well, and now you're sometimes in some cases you're stuck, right? You're a medical doctor, you're a lawyer, and you're like, what? A lawyer's a little bit less stuck, but what do you do then?
Exactly.
You didn't kind of face that.
That's where I was in finance. I was 25. I woke up and I said, okay, I'm in New York. I'm in this supposed dream job, because my family's happy. And that's when I was like, I'm really living someone else's life,
Right.
So coming back to that emotional intelligence, realizing like, are you just going through the conveyor belt? Are you deciding how you're going to be manufactured and how you're going to be coded and patterned?
Right.
And that's where I really broke loose, and decided to pivot to fashion. My family thought I was crazy. I did not really have their support.
No.
And it was one of the best things I did.
Yeah. But you needed to do it for yourself. And I think that's common, right? We get pushed along because look, our family means well, and they have this vision of what's good for you or me or whatever. I grew up in a Jewish family in the Northeast. Everyone goes to, becomes a professional and this and that, you go out on your own, start your own business. And, sometimes we just, because we're young when we start on this process and you don't have the point where you wake up. I mean, some people have an epiphany. I guess you did, but not everybody does. And you kind of like wake up one day and you're like, how the heck did I get here? Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of wandering through life. I'm guilty of it too. I mean, it's the same thing, but it's a lot to be said for that. So some of your journey though was self-discovery. I'm sure some of it was kind of accidental, right? I mean, you kind of stumble. Look at the job, right? You could have gotten that job in fashion and then, stayed with it because the economy wasn't what it was.
100%. That would have changed my life. I mean, and not that for the better or for the worse, but that was definitely a split in the road in my journey.
Right.
And so I would have easily climbed that corporate ladder. I could have easily lived in New York and been happy. Since then I left New York, lived in Puerto Rico, and now I'm in Houston and have really, written a book and spoken around the world and started a personal branding firm, which has been so nothing that I would have ever expected, but just a brilliant journey that I really, really appreciate and feel, it's a privilege as an immigrant to kind of have your own business and be living this dream. And I don't take that lightly.
Yeah. So after school and you started getting this message out there, did you kind of stay on that path? You never went back to corporate America after that, corporate jobs?
I didn't. It's one thing folded after the other. So I was doing, you know, talks at the museum or going into colleges. Then when I did that, I realized that I can actually go ahead and start a nonprofit and begin to leverage all these things that I'm doing in a formal fashion and get bigger contracts with the education system during this down economy. So I started Free Your Start Foundation, and I wrote business of fashion programs, and I administered them semester longs, and the kids would get credit. We'd raise money.
Oh, college kids.
These were high school kids.
Oh, high school. Okay.
High school in Brooklyn. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So
and
I
you
did
were
that
in
for
Houston?
Four
no,
years.
You were still in New York at the time.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I was in Brooklyn and partnered with Big Picture Learning Schools and some other charter schools that would allow me to come in and once a week I'd have a class with them, and we'd either publish a magazine or produce a fashion show. And then the proceeds would go back to, for example, buying software for the school, something of that nature. So it was great. It was great for 4 years. And fashion was a way to get them to learn confidence. But then I noticed, like, okay, you know what? Their baggage is Louis Vuitton, but it's still baggage. And that emotional mess is still there. And I really want to create leaders and change lives. And that's when I closed the nonprofit, left New York after 10 years, and moved to Puerto Rico, where I really took this.
Is that your roots, Puerto Rican?
I am not. I was born in Iran.
Okay. So you wanted to go to, like, where you possibly could find a hurricane on a regular basis. You moved to Puerto Rico and Houston. So that's
exactly
right. Great.
When your life's a hurricane, you look for a hurricane.
So what drove you to Puerto Rico?
I was there for a friend's wedding, and I happened to meet a woman there, and she was starting Dreamcatcher Guest House, and it was nothing at the time. And she said, go pick your room. Come on back and help me start this business. I was like, you got it. So I went back to New York and shut everything down. And I needed that, because at that point I felt like the nonprofit was not achieving what I needed to achieve. I knew that it was time for me to pivot and take my social impact to another level. Right. And also I was tiptoeing on burnout, to be honest.
Okay.
So it was time. And I said, okay, who am I when I'm not a New Yorker? Who am I when I'm not the executive director? So kind of always challenging myself with these honest conversations is what I do. And it's what emotional intelligence leaders do to grow and expand. And so I ended up going there and helping Sylvia. I also did a lot of bartering, because I just wanted the ego to get out of the way. And for me to, like, really check in with, what do I want to do? Because at this point I'm 33, I'm not exactly a spring chicken, and I need to really figure out, what am I doing here? What am I good at? What fuels me? And how can I leverage that into making some money?
And her business was a guest house. I mean, people would come and stay. Is that what it is? Hospitality, basically?
It is. And she's grown that into La Finca, which is in Vieques. And it has just, I mean, it's an amazing place that has tripled in size. So La Finca in Vieques, Dreamcatcher Guest House, Sylvia DeMarco, a phenomenal entrepreneur. She took her experience of building movie sets and brought it into refurbishing these homes and making them, like, just out of, I don't know, just amazing experiences.
And she's still going strong today?
Strong.
All right, well, you got to get her on the podcast. I got to come and get her.
Okay.
Do a little remote stuff. But I got to tell you something, though. You are, I'm sure you don't look at it this way, but you're very brave. Most people, I don't know, 33, 20. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's easier when you're 23 because you're too stupid to know any better. But certainly you're 33 to pick up, move to a place where, I mean, basically, Mamma Mia, you were like, okay, I'm going. And you're there. And, you know, free to be you and me type of stuff. It's a very difficult, I'm sure you had a lot of people, if they thought you were crazy in New York, they probably thought you out of your mind, you're moving to Puerto Rico. It's not even like you have family down there, right? So
exactly.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for that, for people that are not happy with what they're doing or where they are in life. I'm not suggesting they should pack their bags and move to Puerto Rico, but you were there. I mean, an opportunity arose when you were there. But I think that people have to be a little bit more brave. Now, were you married at the time, or you didn't have kids? So it was easy to do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Harder for me. I got one in college, one leaving for college next week, and a little one in 10th grade. So I can't just, I mean, would my little one love to move to, like, like Puerto Rico or Houston? In a second, she'd be like on a plane. But a lot of people are afraid. They feel like it's too much of a change, or it's too big of a risk. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if people say that to you enough, but if you look at it that way, it's you it maybe looking back, it didn't seem like you're so brave, but you know, you took a risk. You didn't really know this woman that well, right? You just met her down there. You saw something in her and you kind of threw caution to the wind a little bit, right?
I did. I did throw caution to the wind, and thank you for, and I'm going to receive that. I also think two things are true. Like, what's my driver inside? And the driver was really to like find myself. And I think as a someone who was transplanted from Iran to Denver, Colorado as a refugee of war, it's like you're trying to find your roots.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until December of 2020 when I purchased the home that I'm sitting in right now where I really felt settled enough and realized, oh my gosh, I've literally been going around the world trying to figure out where
do I
belong.
Right, now
time
to put roots down, right.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you end up in Houston?
I ended up in Houston for family reasons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So thank you for saying brave, but I think we all have drivers, right? And if you can't move to Puerto Rico, you can definitely adopt little things in your day to day just to break up your routine.
Right.
And there's moments where you're really brave. I think Mitchell, you having a podcast and putting yourself out there so regularly is really brave. You're owning your voice, and thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no, just like you, I don't feel that way. You know, it's like you're living through it, right? And I talk to people all the time and I just enjoy sharing. You know, one of my struggles is helping entrepreneurs make better decisions and do things a little bit more strategically and follow things and learn about branding and all these different types of things. And that's how it kind of started. For me, it was like, well, I got to produce content. I got to get my message out there. I got to be known and thought of and top of mind. How do I want to do that? And I listen to podcasts and I like podcasting. So it kind of, I don't tell everybody to start a podcast. I tell everybody, you know, do what you like to do. Like blogging was good for you and speaking is good for you. And it all kind of fits in, you know, then it becomes a wheelhouse and you're doing stuff. But I guess looking back, if you go to Puerto Rico, right. And it didn't work out, you had an experience, right. You pack your bags and you decide where you're going to go next. So from that standpoint, it shouldn't be that scary to other people to say, hey, you know, what do I really have to lose versus what I could gain from what a great experience, you know?
Get off the conveyor belt, people. Even if you go for 7 to 10 days and like literally make yourself not get on the phone, you know, make yourself have these honest conversations with yourself. Expect that the first three days are going to just be you unwinding, but like there's ways to do it, but it's about self-reflection. It's about honest conversations. It's about, okay, is this narrative that I'm saying inside still true to who I am today?
Right.
You know, how can I push a little further or what do I need to pause on?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely being honest with yourself. If you listen, I don't know if it's this week or I just had this gentleman on Suresh. His family's traditionally Indian. I met him through a podcast event that we did, and he's got a medical background, and he is the same thing. You either become a doctor, a lawyer, or you're a loser. And he followed this thing through. And next thing you know, is he finds himself all the way through medical school and getting his residency in orthopedics. And he's like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. This is terrible. And he's now in the medical space as an executive and an entrepreneur, and he speaks and everything, but it was hard for him to step back and say, if you listen to his story, that this isn't working for me. And I don't know how to tell my family it's going to disown me, you know, because they have certain expectations of what you should or, you know, should not do. On the entrepreneurial side, very few of us have families, especially older relatives that have any entrepreneurial, you know, experience, background. They just look at it as like, you know, entrepreneurship is like, you know, how to lose money and ruin your career in three easy steps.
Yeah. Why you know? Work so hard? Yeah.
Right. Right. And it's not for everybody. There's plenty of people I meet that are, you know, they figure out their business and their business is going well, and then they can't transition to another business because they haven't developed those skills on a broad base. It's only for that particular, you know, business. So it's not for everybody, and the world would collapse if everybody became an entrepreneur, right? We all need those different people in the world. But I think, a lot of people just, they look back and they're like, I should have done that 20 years ago. Yeah. You know, I had that opportunity to go wherever and try it out. And it's unfortunate. So it's a good message. So, when you were in Puerto Rico, were you blogging from there? Were you doing stuff from there? Or are you just helping her promote the business? What were you doing there?
I first helped her for about 3 months, you know, building the website, thinking about operations, things of that nature. And then I really realized, I said, Sahar, you came from New York And you literally brought New York to Puerto Rico. Here I am in a house of construction. It's a new business, you know, and I was like, this is not what we wanted to avoid burnout. So I left and moved in the same neighborhood and just, you know, kind of supported from afar and really began to think about what is it that I want to do? And that's when I just began to do a lot of writing. And, you know, at the time and ever thinking of like, oh, I want to be a writer, writing being a main part of my career is seems like a luxury, right? Like starving artist, who are you to even think about that? But I did begin to write. And what really came of that was my memoir and my first book, Find Your Voice. So what does that actually mean? I wrote a loose, you know, kind of not script, manuscript. But manuscript
yeah.
of what I wanted, really a table of contents. And I'll say, thank goodness I'm a good speaker, because once I really began to understand that I wanted this book and Find Your Voice to be my message, I got out there again on social networks and started sharing about it, even before it was a thing.
Right.
So I got invited to come and speak in LA, and that's where my publisher was in the audience. And that's where I'm so glad that I'm a good presenter, because when she got my manuscript, her and my editor were like, this has got to go. This is Cliff Notes. They wanted to toss the whole thing, but they're like, the concept is there.
Okay.
So Puerto Rico, at the end of it, you know, I just stayed there a year, but it was fruitful in the sense of allowing me to pause, think, giving myself space to write and, you know, not feeling guilty for it and not feeling guilty for diving into some deep thinking. So it was the foundation for everything from since then.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
So they helped you write the book. They interviewed you, talked to you about it. You shared your ideas, or did you have to do a lot of the writing yourself?
I had to rewrite the whole thing. For 6 months, I had writer's block. And at that time, I also had some family things going on and I needed to relocate my mom from Denver, Colorado to Houston. So I was in the process of doing that, had 6 months of writer's block, then finally sat in my room for 1 month and busted that book out. And then from there, it got sent to editors. And one of the big things is I couldn't give myself permission to take up my story in those pages. And you know, as it's about her, it's about the reader, it's about the reader. And they're like, well, they learn from stories. So you need to share your stories.
Yeah.
And so that was part of it. And it's stories followed by a reflection guide, which is really rooted in emotional intelligence.
Yeah. I think I probably have to, it's a lot of work, but I think I probably have to write a book, like a coffee table book about, you know, my 100 lessons learned from different people and have to share their ideas in a book. But that I'm working on a legal book right now with a friend of mine who's also a publicist and a writer. I couldn't do it myself. It would be blank, like you said, for the longest period of time. So we need a piece on this. I interview somebody, I transcribe it, I send it to him, and he does the work. But I think I have to do that in the future, is to share all the guests' thoughts and lessons and things like that. But it's a daunting, it's definitely a big project to do. So, all right. So now we're getting through. You got to Houston, right? Mm-hmm. You met the publicist, you're working on the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so take me through that journey as to, because we're going to lead up to, you know, How do you promote yourself? Why should you promote yourself? All the emotional intelligence and stuff, and how you kind of got there, and you've been on a lot of things, and how did you promote yourself? So maybe you can share those thoughts and ideas and what other people should know about doing those types of things.
Well, we do future casting in our business. Sometimes we do it in our mind. So that 6 months of writer's block was a voice inside I like to call Psychic Phyllis. The gentleman, you could call it Psychic Phil, but really in cognitive behavior and emotional intelligence, when we fortune tell an ending that's either catastrophic, Sahar, English is your second language, who the heck wants to hear from someone from Iran,
Yeah, self-sabotage, all the self-sabotage stuff. Yeah.
Right. Or you look at the end and everything's going to be great. I'm going to write this book. I'm going to be rich, whatever. So when you have that fortune-telling voice, or you or your clients that are telling the end either really good or really bad, Psychic Phil or Phyllis got to get out of there. And that's one of the big things. And so I worked from 2012 to 2014 with BBL Publishing. They're based out of Southern California, Leanne Garms. And Bridget is one of her editors there. And we worked on the manuscript, and the stories really came flowing out of me, and they didn't have to be touched, which was great. And then the self-reflection guide got some tweaks where, you know, for folks that are really self-aware, I was at a 10 and I needed to kind of bring it down to a 2 and make it more just realistic in layman's terms. So in 2014, the book came out. And so in those 2 years, I'm talking about it. I'm asking my Instagram followers, what book cover do you like? I'm definitely using them as, you know, part of a focus group and taking them on the journey. I'm speaking already. I'm booking speaking gigs with the, you know, find your voice message. I'm testing.
How are
that
you
out.
Finding those speaking opportunities? How do people, if somebody has a good message and they want to get it out there, where do they get started? They don't just call up a publicist and say, hey, get me gigs.
Right. The publicist won't do it for you.
Right.
Publicist will give you a nice little barcode. We'll hook you up with your editor. But a lot of the publicists rely on you for marketing, even the big houses.
Right.
So that's something you need to be clear if you're going to publish a book, that get ready to market yourself. So for me and for anyone out there, I said, who is my reader? And I had three personas. Where does she hang out? What speaking engagement is she going to? And that's where I pitched myself. Right. And I would literally go to, you know, whether it was a meetup group, a yoga studio, began to go for corporations, medium and large size, you know, and I would look at any of their past events or see what kind of messaging they have on their social media and reflect that in my pitch, bring their words right back to them in a way that also integrates my message of voice and emotional intelligence. So whoever you are, whatever your message is, start with your audience.
Right.
Where do they hang out? And then that the place where they hang out, use that verbiage as a part of your pitch. And so that's what I did. And it's just like you do for your sales teams. You send it out.
It's a good message, right? Know your client, create an ideal client profile or profiles. Mm-hmm. Know your audience, do your market research. Give them what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Reflect back to them. And they're like, wow, she understands us. Because you
did
your
ready to pivot.
Work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because my Find Your Voice audience was 1,000,000% different than who I thought.
Yeah.
Find Your Voice 2014. I'm coming for you. You know, young women, women in college, early in your career. They didn't give a damn.
Right.
You know who cared? Gen X women. Baby boomers, woman who went from, what does she say? The sorority, my mama's house to the sorority's house to my husband's house.
Yeah.
They were the women that were ready to find their voices.
Right. And not the millennials. They're too young. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's good. Look, with all the interviews I do, it constantly comes back to 9 times out of 10, the business owner, the entrepreneur, right? Even if you're self-promoted, you're still an entrepreneur. Unless they do the market research, they're usually wrong. And when they do the market research, they discover how off the mark they are. Just because you think it's a great idea or everybody's going to resonate with what you're saying, and that's your audience, if you leave that to chance, you're probably going to struggle or fail.
Yes. Enter the power of your personal brand.
Yeah, exactly. But you want to craft that message based on the feedback you get from the people that you, let's say, choice, right? Want to do business with.
Mm-hmm.
right? Your ideal client profile doesn't have to be the people that you think you can reach. You want people who you want to reach. So you got to craft that message. But I think that's a good lesson for people in that, you know, you're a writer, you're a speaker, you own a retail business, you have an e-commerce site. It's the same thing. You have to do the research. You got to know your customer. You got to know your marketplace. And if it's not where you want to be, change it. If it is where you want to be, make sure the message is correct.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well said.
Okay. So let's keep taking it through because I want you to share. We said we talk about emotional intelligence and, you know, what do you do? How do you brand yourself? Let's say, let's use me as an example, right? Small attorneys are notoriously atrocious at business and business development. We all kind of get business from each other and whatever. And I do brand myself, obviously, because of the podcast and things like that, but a lot of us don't. Mm-hmm. You know, what's your advice on that? What do you do? How do you brand yourself? What do you?
Yeah. Well, the caveat with attorneys having worked with them is you really can't sell yourself. Like the bar literally won't let you. You have to be just straightforward of this A leads to B, you know? So what I'm going to do, everyone listening, if you're driving, don't take notes while you're driving. Here's the secret sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's
we'll put some links in the show notes maybe with some special stuff.
Here, you know, whether you're going to create your personal brand and pull out an entire website, or if you're just focusing on LinkedIn, whatever platform makes the most sense for you, you don't need to be everywhere. But the secret sauce at Own Your Voice Strategy Firm is we think of it this way. There's three buckets that you're going to create content from because you don't want to just be an endless sales machine. You don't want to be repetitive, right?
Right.
So personal brand, first bucket's personal. How personal is your personal brand? What are you actually going to share on there from your personal life? Are you a foodie? So maybe you'll share, you know, those types of things, or is it something that is a matter of on your desk or how you, you know, organize or project manage? What is it about your personal life? I'll say for me, people are going to get to see my dog. They're going to get to see me on the road. They're not going to get to see anything from my private life at all. Once in a while, maybe my mom gets on there, but that's about it. So that's one bucket.
Right.
Another one is your professional. So this is the bread and butter. What are they coming to you for?
The law practice.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. I think a lot of attorneys don't look at it that way. They look at it, they're a lawyer and their law practice, but they don't realize that there's also a branding side, a personal branding side to that.
Yeah. And having worked with, you know, lawyers and, you know, Mitch, you seem grounded and down to earth. You do a lot of executive coaching. You know, you have to give your client a lot of different options and help them pick the best one.
Guidance, right.
Yeah. So I think it's really important to understand that tone. And the thing with, you know, especially for lawyers or people who work in finance that can't be too salesy, they have to be very factual. I invite you to look up on the web the brand voice archetypes. There are only 12. And this is really the ethos of my firm because I found when branding firms just focus on color and fonts, you're not being emotionally intelligent. You're not thinking about the voice you need to take to influence your customer.
Right.
And so you want to look at those 12 and this helps you in your writing. And it's again, who's my customer and what voice or voices do I need to adopt? You know, is it the hero where I'm going to guide you? Or for Own Your Voice, we have Sage and Rebel. Sage is I've been there, I've done that. Let me help you with personal branding. And when I bring them in, you know, I have a lot of humble people and they don't want to self-promote. So I got to bring that rebel voice and light a little fire under their tush and say, no, this is for the greater good. It's the right thing to do. So it's about understanding your client journey and what voice they need for you to show up. This will help in all of your communication. So again, those were the brand voice archetypes. We are talking about that professional bucket of your personal brand and understanding what are this is the last thing I'll say about that bucket is what is a question you have to answer all the time? The top three. And those are things that you want to create in your content around.
Okay.
And then lastly, the last one is passion. And that passion bucket can be a cause. That passion bucket can be something still in line with your work. So something that you're really passionate about. I'm passionate about, for me, I'm really passionate about working in healthcare innovation. I really love that space. I talk about that quite a bit as well. I'm also passionate about
it. So it could be a pay it forward type of thing or a give back, or it could be just something that you really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Maybe you're a marathoner and that's what you do. You know, so sometimes that's with the personal bucket too. So you decide what works well for you. I'll give you a really quick example of a passion that's worked really well for one of the colleagues that I know. Her name is Danielia. She started a just a meetup group called Beautiful Purpose, turned into a nonprofit. And that's something that she is in the corporate world. She is a director of marketing. Right. But this is something she has always done on the side and always made clear on her LinkedIn and her personal brand that this is just a passion. This is something I do on the side with a group of women. And because of that, that has really attracted these corporate partners to say, we want you to be the director of marketing. And we also want Beautiful Purpose to be part of our community outreach. So it's been something she's been able to leverage for her professional career. And that's, I think, one of the best examples I could give.
Yeah, they liked her message. It resonated with what they wanted to put forth with their branding message. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And she works in banking, so.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, you never know. Well, it makes me feel good because I'm in the process of redoing everything from a branding standpoint because I also came to the crossroad of, wait a second, I'm developing the podcast, I speak, I write. You know, on the personal side, you know, Mitchell Beinhacker, and then there's the law practice. And, you know, one was kind of getting lost in the law practice. So we're taking the website, we're separating it, we're breaking it out so it doesn't get lost and the message can be there and hopefully launch soon. I don't know, we'll see. By the time this comes out, hopefully it'll be launched. So
backlink. You know, I see my personal brand as a top of the sales funnel for my organization. And then also it's a different, you know, stream of revenue with my speaking. So it's your personal brand is a part of your marketing matrix. For anyone who's out there listening and says, is it going to take away from my small business? Is it going to take away from my organization? And it's not.
Right. Well, especially you need multiple streams of income. I mean, that's how any healthy business is going to operate, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So let's talk then about emotional intelligence. Let's talk about what it is. Why we should be cognizant of it and how it can help us, you know, be better at what we do, better human beings, better, I don't know, with our families and our friends and our customers.
Yeah. Well, to break it down, the foundation of emotional intelligence are three things: self-awareness, self-regulation, bump your brakes, and then social awareness, understanding different cultures and what's going on and different people's perspectives and how that, you know, that empathy deal, what does that make them, their perspective? It's not about right or wrong. It's just about understanding someone else's point of view. But that first one, the self-awareness is a huge step, and then being able to regulate that. So that's the easiest way that I can really pinpoint it. For anyone who's in a sales position, I would say they're using emotional intelligence all the time because they know that selling something or negotiations really starts with the first conversation. And so what is sales? It's about creating impact. It's about moving to that next step. It's about creating buy-in with your team members. You're always kind of selling something, right?
Yeah, we really are, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's about understanding how do I need to really, back to that brand voice wheel, it's also your voice. What's the language that I need to adopt? The small words that will land differently with different people.
Yeah.
You know, what is the approach? And in emotional intelligence, there's six leadership styles, and it's never about adopting one. It's about being able to decipher between the few, depending on who's in front of you.
Yeah.
So if in our brand, we take different brand voice archetypes, in our life, we understand, for example, I'll bring up two that I've learned on my journey. One is the democratic. And the other is pace setting.
Okay.
So early in my Own Your Voice strategy firm, I want a democratic. I want everyone to have a voice, no bad ideas, stick them up on the wall. And I caused endless meetings and lots of confusion.
Right.
Because everyone's a visionary.
Right. Exactly.
I said, all right, let me get back in my
New York state of mind. A little loose when it comes from a leadership standpoint.
Yeah. And it created good buy-in. People felt important. People wanted to work hard, but we were working in circles.
Yeah, no results.
Too many ideas, and so I moved into the pace setting, which, you know, I say is my New York style, but it's essentially like moving pretty fast.
Yeah.
You're showing, you know, through example, only works with self-motivated people. If they're not self-motivated, then you're going to just create resentment.
Right.
You're just
like, you're pushing them along and they don't want to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so even with Own Your Voice Strategy Firm, I set it up as a consultancy. So I was never interested in managing a large team or having some big building. No, that's never been my appetite.
Right.
I want everyone to really be empowered. So I do balance that now, and it's worked really well between democratic and pace setting. And so that's just, you know, and you could look up the 6 emotional intelligent leadership styles, and it's just thinking about, you know, your team members are on journeys themselves. And one team member that, you know, for my clients, we do this a lot. A team member came in super excited, was okay with the pace setting, and then began to lose a little bit of confidence. And because of that, that created this echo chamber of doubt.
Right.
And in that moment, the leader actually needed to change more of a coaching. And the coaching is helping them identify the small steps, not doing it for them, but helping them identify the small steps and really kind of getting into that coaching mode. And so I just would say, go out there and do the Google search. And I understand that it's just about pivoting your voice, whether it's your brand or showing up as a leader, to be impactful for who's in front of you.
Yeah. So you do individual coaching as well, or you mostly do speaking and writing? You do.
I do both. And so really I come in with speaking and talk to the team. And then I go in with coaching, and that coaching could be with the team and within the organization or with some folks one-on-one in the audience. And it goes either way.
Yeah. I think your point about self-awareness, and consciousness is probably, from all the people I've spoken to, I don't care if they're neuroscientists, I've spoken to habit scientists, I've spoken to, you know, coaches and you know, therapists, all kinds of stuff. It's always coming down to being self-aware, mm-hmm. of what you're doing, not doing, are uncomfortable with, are not facing. You know, maybe deep down inside, you really know what the problem is, what you're afraid of, but you won't face it. And I think a lot of it not goes away, but becomes less daunting. Right. Less of an obstacle, or it becomes a surmountable as opposed to an unsurmountable task. Yeah. When we become aware of, you know, what we're doing, how we're saying, how we carry ourselves. Why are these people doing business with us? And you're like, oh my God, I didn't realize that I'm really kind of turning everybody off because of the way that I carry myself. And I think that is, you know, it's not the key, but it's the beginning of, you know, starting to get to where you really want to be, and then realizing that, hey, this is a choice, right? I can choose to be a certain way that I like, but I gotta be in front of the right people, you know?
I challenge the leaders out there to ask for feedback. For feedback. That's the, you know, easiest way to begin to strengthen that self-awareness.
Right.
And see how you actually land with other people. Another really easy exercise I love having people do is go ask 20 people, personal, professional, to send you 3 adjectives. What are 3 adjectives that come to mind when you think of me? And, you know, I've had my clients create pivot charts. I've had some people create a wall of stickies, you know, and it's for you to kind of understand, how do people perceive you? How are people taking you on?
Yeah. And, I think people are afraid of that. I think they're afraid to hear the truth because it might not be what they want to hear, but it's happening anyway.
It is. And what's scarier is not realizing it. And then you feel unfulfilled, but you don't know how to get past, you know, out of your own way.
Right.
So the opportunity cost is great. It's your own joy.
That's a good business economic term, opportunity cost. And it's not just money and what you lose by the choices. It's how it affects you when you continue to make bad choices with not even knowing that you're doing it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Life is short. You have magic to give. You have people to love. So
right.
Don't settle.
Right. So we see the message developing here, right? You can build your personal brand and put out a message. You can build your business. And if you're emotionally intelligent and you're in touch with everything that's going on, it starts coming together. You know,
it absolutely does. It does. And the, you know, last little thing I'll leave with you is that self-awareness is really dialing into that play-by-play going on with your self-talk. And we can have up to 100,000 thoughts in a day. So that psychic fillers
and
these other things, you know, it's a lot to separate from that conversation. I like to name like the personality you're taking on the inside to separate yourself from the inner noise and say, okay, is this just a pattern, a habit, the static
right.
that's kind of controlling my life, my actions, my emotions? you know, and that's how you can engage in a meaningful conversation with yourself, because you cannot be aware of every thought and everything. That would just be draining. It is draining.
Oh my God. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to go on autopilot, but over time, you know, muscle memory and, you know, you develop processes for making decisions and being better at it. I had a gentleman on my podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he wrote a book, Never Go With Your Gut. He's a neuroscientist, and he studied the lack of processes that people use when they're making decisions, because that, like you said, they're not in touch with themselves, mm-hmm. and their gut. And then we all run into difficulties. We all run into obstacles. But if you're not in touch with yourself and you don't have a process that you've created for yourself that makes you comfortable, you won't even know how to fix these things, because they're going to happen, right? You've had challenges. I've had challenges. We continue to have them. It's the sign of life. I think challenges happen when you die, then there's no more challenges, right? Mm-hmm. But the sign of life comes with those things, and you have to be in touch with all those things. And you, like you said, you can't do it 24 hours a day. You can't say, well, why don't, and step back every time, because it'll make you crazy.
Yeah.
But you, you really have to do that. But I appreciate it. So the book is available, I assume, on Amazon, right?
Books on Amazon. It's actually an online course, which I would highly recommend over that, because then there's me talking you through it and really good exercises. There's also even a personal branding course, so you can expand on those buckets and really understand how to play online.
Okay.
So yeah,
you give us a link to those for the show notes so people can mm-hmm. connect with you. I guess they can find you at, I believe, isn't your website saharpaz.com?
You got it. And okay. Saharpaz across social as well, LinkedIn okay. and Instagram. Good.
They should follow you, connect with you, meet you and learn from you. And I, you know, thank you for taking what is 50 minutes or more to join me and share all of your thoughts and ideas. And let's definitely stay in touch. I love to continue these conversations for my viewers and for myself and for personal betterment. So I thank you very much.
I thank you for having me, Mitch.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.